Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week with Dr. T, our weekly news program. We're so grateful that you're here, and we're so grateful for all of you people that have followed us every Monday morning for the last several years. I wanted to start today by talking about that the 10 Penny Prime membership that we kicked off at the beginning of the year, that we're hoping that you're all members by now because it supports everything that we do. Each month, there are three new educational programs and content only for members, a topical white paper that I write that's usually 20 to 30 pages long, a recorded educational presentation, and then the last Wednesday night of the month, we have a live event called Ask the Expert. This month in April, we are doing reproductive health and problems with infertility. Next month, we're going to be doing neurological health and brain health, and that is all part of your membership if you're a member at 10 Penny Prime. If you're already a member and you've been supporting us for a long time, thank you so much. We're very grateful for that. You don't have to do anything different. You can still go to dr10penny.com and log into your membership portal. If you'd like to join us and you have our new member to 10 Penny Prime, go to shop10penny.net, and hover over the membership tab. You'll see everything there that's available and all the reasons why you will get great benefits from joining us and becoming a member. And so we want to make this year, 2025, the year of knowledge, empowerment, and action. So I want to thank everyone for your continued support. And all to the new members, we welcome you and thank you too. Now, before I introduce to you today's special guest, Gail Isnitt, I want to talk about her book, Out of Sight, An Undercover Investigator's Fight for Animal Rights and Her Own Survival. Wow, this is going to be really good. She and I were talking a little bit before we went live. We've got a lot of things to really share with you. So you won't want to miss this. We're going to take a really quick break. We will be right back.
Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years.
Go to dr10penny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Gail Isnitt is the Chief Investigative Officer for the Humane Farming Association and the winner of an Albert Schweitzer Medal for Outstanding Achievement in Animal Welfare. Her work has resulted in exposés on television stations. She's done more than 1,000 radio interviews and has been featured in newspapers across the country. Her new book, Out of Sight, An Undercover Investigator's Fight for Animal Rights and Her Own Survival, is both an investigative deep dive into the meat industry's treatment of farm animals and the story of resilience and personal triumph. It is not only an expose on the meat industry, but also an account of the lifelong struggle towards self-acceptance and becoming an empowered victor. She also does not only talks about the expose of the meat industry, but the people that work there, the horrible conditions for the employees, the mental anguish that they go through, and she uncovers all of it in her new book. Gail, welcome so much to This Week with Dr. T. I can't wait to dig into this, what you've investigated for all of these years.
Hi, Dr. Tenpenny. Thank you so much for having me on.
You're welcome. You know, this is your second book on this topic in your research. Your first book, called Slaughterhouse, The Shocking Story of Greed, Neglect, Inhumane Treatment Inside the U.S. Meat Industry, was written in 2006 and has been described as both disturbing, graphic, and necessary. Since 2006, and all of the research that you uncovered, all of the I think you had a million different videos and things like that. Has anything changed? It's been almost 20 years.
Yes, to be honest, things have gotten dramatically worse.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say. Actually, my first book was written in 1997 and updated in 2006, and things have gotten dramatically worse. I mean, there has been a tremendous increase in production line speeds in slaughterhouses, and that's because in the last few decades, thousands of small to mid-sized slaughterhouses have been forced out of business by these huge corporate slaughterhouses that slaughter more than 1 million animals a year. And the result is you have fewer slaughterhouses killing more animals. And the result of that is you have just line speeds that are so fast, it's just virtually impossible to ensure that the animals are rendered unconscious as is required by law. And I can give you a little bit of background about line speeds if that's interesting to you. Yeah, it used to be that you could kill 1,106 hogs per hour in per line in slaughterhouses. And just last week, the Trump administration announced a change in policy where they're working to eliminate line speeds so that you can kill more than one hog every 3 seconds. You can kill hogs as fast as you want and as recklessly as you want, even though there is a Humane Methods of Slaughter Act. And the result is that some slaughterhouses that are doing this initial phase are killing hogs one hog every 2.5 seconds. Mm-hmm. And there are some serious consequences to that. And then, I'll give you another example. One hog slaughterhouse that I visited several years ago was killing 144,000 hogs a week. Oh. And that was then. They're killing more now, 35,000 hogs a day. And I'm sure they'll increase to whatever speed they want to since the Trump administration is going to allow that. But chickens, poultry, broiler birds, meat birds, were being slaughtered at a rate of, on the evisceration line, which is the slaughter line, were being killed at a rate of 140 birds per minute. And now that's being increased to 175 birds per minute, or 3 birds every second. So there are some really terrible consequences of this consolidation in the meat industry. 390 cattle per hour, I think that's going to stay the same. But some of these plants are just moving at such rapid speeds, it's virtually impossible to ensure that the Humane Slaughter Act is being enforced.
What prompted you, or have you just been following this industry for so long that you decided that since your updated book in 2006 came out, and now it's almost 20 years later, what was it that prompted you to dig in and write again and expose this even more?
Well, in my first book, it was specifically strictly slaughterhouses, meatpacking plants. But in my new book, it's also factory farms, to let the public know what's going on in factory farms. And it was time to write, it's really a memoir. It was time to write a book that the masses could read, that's not limited to animal enthusiasts, because my first book was very successful among animal activists. But I want the general public to know what's going on. So I wrote a memoir to describe what was going on in my life while I was documenting and exposing these violations. And I think it's important to know both what's going on in slaughterhouses and in factory farms, because Americans have a right to know what's going on and what animals suffer to make their way to America's dinner tables.
You know, this has been going on. Wasn't Animal House written like in the 30s when they first exposed the horrible things about the slaughterhouses. So it sounds
like Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. Is that what you're thinking?
Jungle, yes, thank you.
Yeah. I think that was written in the very early 1900s. And I think it resulted in the establishment of some food safety regulations that didn't exist prior to that. So my first book, Slaughterhouse, has been compared to The Jungle because it's still a jungle. It's even worse.
Tell the audience how you got involved and decided to take on this industry and this issue with farm animals.
Well, I was working for the largest animal protection organization in the country at the time. And I was doing all sorts of investigations into dog racing and puppy mills and Santeria, which is animal sacrifice, and factory farms and things like that. But then I received a letter from a whistleblower who was anonymous, but he put his address on the envelope, so I was able to find out who he was. He was a USDA staff member. He was working inside a meatpacking plant, and he advised me that it was routine for animals, cows at that slaughterhouse. I'm sorry to say this because I don't want to upset you, but they were having their heads skinned while they were still fully conscious. And he went to all of his supervisors. He went to his member of Congress. He went to the Veterans Administration because he was a veteran. And nobody would do anything about it. It was standard practice to have their heads skinned while they were still fully conscious. And then he went to a number of animal groups and nobody responded, but I got his letter and I responded, and he set me on quite a path of discovery, because after I went down and corroborated that this was in fact going on routinely, I went to other slaughterhouses across the United States and found considerably worse violations taking place. So that's what set me on my investigation.
You know, at one point you had put together a documentary and took it to television producers who said it was too violent to be on television. But yet on YouTube and television and all these places, we see war and people blowing up and all sorts of horrible things. How did you eventually able to get on those shows and to tell people on a larger scale what was going on?
Well, I spent an enormous amount of time with 60 Minutes to expose it, and they came out in the field and decided it was too disgusting. I spent a lot of time with ABC and NBC, and they all determined it was too disgusting. That was what they all said. And it was very, very disheartening to spend so much time and turn over all my documentation to those networks. But eventually, radio was fantastic. Radio let me talk about the violations. This was before podcasts. And I was able to get great coverage by HBO, which I'll tell you about in a minute, and the Washington Post. The HBO story was about a factory farm where the old sows, I'll give you a little background, breeding sows, mother pigs, spend their lives in gestation crates. That means they're in cages that are only 2 feet wide and 7 feet long, and they're like 600 pounds. And 2 feet wide is a lot. We've seen them where they're 18 or 19 inches wide. And they can never turn around, and they develop all sorts of terrible problems from living that way. And I can go into that too if you want me to. But anyway, long story short, at this operation, when they were used up, they just weren't as productive as they used to be, or if they had arthritis or respiratory problems from standing over the waste pits. They were hotshot prodded out of their gestation crates and dragged to a ledge, dumped over the side of the ledge, which was 4 feet outside into the frigid temperature, sat on a pile where they watched their fellow sows having a chain put around their neck and being attached to a front end loader. And the tines of the loader were lifted, and the animals were strangled. They were basically suffocated under their own weight. And it was so unacceptable that we were able to get HBO involved in our investigation. And they produced a story called Death on a Factory Farm. And it aired 19 times in 1 month on HBO, which was great. And then it continued to air. So that was a big success, because that was totally unacceptable to be hanging sows as a way to kill them. And
this is just such a repulsive story. And it's not about you. It's about the story, you know, about how they inhumanely just look at these animals as though they're not animals. They're not living, breathing, God-created things. They're just a commodity. It's no different than getting rid of literally an old pair of shoes, you know, that they just, it's no good anymore. Or, you know, chicken, you know, they can get baby chicks for a certain price. And so if they kill off 70,000 of them, no big deal, they'll just replace them. And so it's just, and I know that a lot of the animal activists over the years have tried to make a big case about the fact that animals have souls, and animals are living, breathing creatures that feel and experience pain. And they live in little tribes. They communicate with each other. They have their own language. And that this is just endless slaughter of a group of living things for commercial means. And I know that you've spent a lot of time trying to expose the factory farms, but it sounds like that's getting worse and not better. Is that correct?
It is. That's why it's so important for the public to know what's going on, because the public can demand change. I mean, when I was able to establish that hundreds of cows were being skinned and dismembered alive at a Washington State slaughterhouse a day. And we got videotape and everything. And this was the other positive story. Doesn't sound very positive, but I was able to implore a Washington Post reporter to do a story on the fact that the Humane Methods of Slaughter Act was not being enforced. And he did a great story. It was on the front page of the Washington Post, and Congress was up in arms when they read it. And it was one of the highest reader response pieces in the history of the Post. Wow. And it resulted in funding for the Humane Methods of Slaughter Act, which was the first funding in 43 years. It had been on the books for 43 years and it had never been funded for enforcement. And just so you know, the Humane Methods of Slaughter Act just requires that animals be handled humanely and rendered unconscious before they're butchered. And it gives meat inspectors who are inspecting body parts and meat for contamination and abnormalities, it gives them the authority to stop the line when they observe violations. So it was really great that the Washington Post did that story. Not that the inspectors are really able to enforce the law.
They can't?
Well, they're not really able to, because they're not in the areas of the plants where the animals are being stunned and slaughtered. Now, since we've brought so much attention to this issue, inspectors now make required spot checks to those areas. But I don't think spot checks to the stunning area is sufficient, because things change when an inspector comes into the area. People start doing everything correctly. And so only less than 3% of USDA's food inspection budget is devoted to enforcing Humane Slaughter Act regulations.
And when was that story in the Washington Post? When was that run?
It was back in 2001. So that was 43 years after the law had been passed.
In 2025, so 24 years later, it still isn't enforced. And is it continued to get at least some meager level of funding?
Yes. Since that story, it's been getting tens of millions of dollars a year for funding for spot checks. And the spot checks are more frequent. But like I said, I just don't have confidence that spot checks are doing the job, because when they do a spot check and they find something violative, it's like, well, what was happening 5 minutes before you got there and 10 minutes after you're gone? So I don't have a lot of confidence in the spot checks.
You know, in your new book, Out of Sight, you talk about elaborate cover-ups with the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and a state governor. And you just mentioned that the Trump administration is loosening the standards, but it seems to me that the new Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, she's a woman. You would think she would be able to have more empathy for these animals than what men would have. I'm sorry, I don't mean to say to the men in my audience that you have no empathy, but you know, sometimes it's all about money. But Brooke Rollins, she seems like a pretty down to earth sort of person. Have you had a conversation with her yet, or are you planning to?
I don't think that she would sit down with me for a conversation. The only conversation I ever had with the Secretary of Agriculture was one day when he was on C-SPAN. And I called in, I was sitting in a hotel room for a presentation I was going to be giving in my underwear. And I called up C-SPAN to see if I could talk to the Secretary of Agriculture. And they wouldn't put me through, but eventually I called on the conservative line and they did put me through. And I told him exactly what was happening. And he said that he had read part of my book, Slaughterhouse, and that he was going to take my concerns back to the people, the higher-ups at USDA. But he focused in our brief conversation on what a great job the meat inspectors were doing inspecting meat and how excellent the meat is inspected and on and on. He just wouldn't listen to what I was saying about the humane treatment of farm animals in slaughterhouses. So that's my only conversation I've ever had with Secretary of Agriculture, but I've had run-ins with them doing cover-ups, like in the Florida slaughterhouse where they're skinning the cows' heads alive. The Secretary of Agriculture was required, after we sued the USDA and took all the appropriate actions, the Secretary of Agriculture was required to produce a report about that slaughterhouse. And he produced the most incredibly glowing report, like it was the most wonderful slaughterhouse on the planet. And then surprisingly, this was the largest slaughterhouse in Southeast. Surprisingly, it went out of business the next week and never opened up again.
Oh, wow. Well, a good outcome.
Yeah, right.
Why do you think that Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins wouldn't meet with you or wouldn't have a conversation with you?
I don't know. I just think I'm considered an activist. And it's a good point, though, that maybe I should try to set something up.
It seems as though it's a new day in the Trump administration in terms of the cabinet members. I mean, I just find it, I watch as many as I can, and I find it very interesting when Trump has an open forum cabinet meeting. Now, I'm sure that probably for an hour or whatever, however long before, it's probably closed and private and secure, and they talk about confidential things. But then they open it up for about 90 minutes to the press. And ever, I don't know if you've watched any of them, but they go on
Yes.
the table, and each secretary has 3 to 5 minutes to sort of give highlights about what they're doing. And it's very informative, and I think very revealing, because we've never seen that before. Everything has always been under the cloak of security and safety and all that stuff. And I feel like, on the one hand, they get an opportunity to say the problems, and they also get an opportunity to say what is happening in their department to make the corrections. I really believe that this is at least you need to make a concerted effort. And if there's anything that I can do to help with that, and some of the groups that I'm in, to get this information in front of the Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, and anybody that's listening to this that's been involved in the MAHA movement, make America healthy again. And we talk so much about food. We have to have healthy food. And that means that we need to have our food and animal industry, the slaughterhouses, do what they're supposed to do. And that's not just get us clean food. That's taking care of those animals that sacrifice their life to become our food. And so I'm this just makes me like riled up. It just really gets me fired. Thing.
Yeah.
I think that getting you with Secretary Rollins, or a couple of people that are close to her, or Secretary of the Interior, I think might have something to say about that, because the interior has to do with ranch lands and how those animal sort of things. I think that there might be. I mean, people sometimes they just pass regulations because they don't know any better. They think it sounds like a good thing, and they've got 870,000 things on their plate to grab their attention. But this is so important, Gail. It's so important.
There's considerable pride in the fact that they have these spot checks at USDA, so I think that they think they're doing a good job. But it was very interesting to me that in yesterday's New York Times, Nicholas Kristof did a story on inhumane slaughter, and he's the first person that has ever said the same thing that I've been saying, that there needs to be full-time observation of animals being slaughtered. And it was so,
Off the truck all the way till the time that they're dead.
right, yeah. I was so glad to read that column, because it was just like, yay, somebody else is hearing me. I mean, is saying the same thing that I'm saying, because I think USDA thinks they're doing a good job now with their spot checks.
That was in the New York Times. So that means that you can get a hold of that journalist. And so, can you get a hold of that journalist and thank him and send him a copy of your book?
Yeah, I've already done that. In fact, I asked for my publicist to send him a copy of the book before that column came out, because he's so good on that issue. And then that column came out yesterday. So, yeah.
Interview you then, interview for more details and things like that. That would be great. This animal cruelty thing, I knew a little bit about this beforehand, because I'd seen some spot videos that I just can't allow that sort of stuff into my brain, because it's been since I've been 7 years old that I've just, that sort of stuff kind of goes in, and it's like bubble gum on your shoes to me. I can never get it out of my brain. So how do you deal with all the stuff that you know? Because it's been decades that you've been doing this.
Yeah, it's been 40 something years.
The animal cruelty, and then we'll get into a little bit on the cruelty to the people that work there too.
Okay. One thing I just wanted to say in regard to what we were just talking about is that it doesn't help a lot to talk to USDA about factory farms, because factory farms are wholly unregulated. There's no one regulating factory farms. So I just thought I'd mention that, because that's a shame, because there's so much abuse going on inside factory farms, and there are no regulations. So anyway, that's that. How do I handle it? I've managed to suppress my feelings my whole life. I just, unfortunately, have not been as in touch with my feelings as I would like to be, although I'm getting closer, which is really great. Sometimes when I'm scrolling on Facebook and I see something awful, having to do with farm animals because I get a lot of farm animal posts. I won't even look at it, which is amazing for me because I usually just am completely open to all this material. But I've been pretty suppressed. My feelings have been pretty suppressed my whole life. So I guess, I've had other physical issues to deal with. So I didn't really have the option to worry about how I was feeling about this stuff, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's people who spend their lives for a cause to try to make it better, and they're investigating horrible things, like people that investigate human trafficking or pedophilia. It's what the humane things that are done to humans. You've spent your entire life investigating the inhumane things that are done to animals. So, I wish I could hop through the Zoom and give you a big hug because
Oh, thank you. That's so kind.
okay. We're going to be taking a really quick break. This morning we're talking to Gail Eisnitz and about her new book, Out of Sight: An Undercover Investigator's Fight for Animal Rights and Her Own Survival. When we come back, we have a few more questions about animal rights and the people who work in those horrific slaughterhouses. And then we're going to talk a little bit about her own survival. We're going to take a really quick break. We'll be right back.
We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our Opti line, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries, and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Gail, this is just I knew this was going to be a great interview, and it's got so much important information to get out to the general public. One of the comments that was on, because your book has just been released. I mean, it's in fact on Amazon, it says it's not released until May the 6th. So
That's right.
it's just coming out. So I was reading a lot of comments and things from your last book on Slaughterhouse. And one of the comments under that previous book was, the information here was not enough to turn me vegetarian, but it was certainly enough to make me think about the meat handling and cooking practices. What would you like to recommend to people about the purchases that they make at supermarkets versus should it be better if they knew their own rancher and their own farmers?
Yeah, I mean, I always say if you're, well, my message is to eat less meat. I'm not telling people to go vegan or vegetarian. I'm just saying eat less meat. And the meat that you do buy, the animal products that you do buy, if you can buy local, if you can find out where they're coming from or how they were slaughtered, would be really a step in the right direction. I mean, in my first book, I described a lot about the contamination of meat and poultry products. A great deal. I go into that a great deal, the safety of meat and poultry products. But in my second book, I don't focus on that. But I just think that people should try to find out where they're animal products are coming from and buy local if they can. Even organic is supposedly better than non-organic. But I just try to get people to find out about the sources of their animal products.
Would it be possible, you said that the factory farming industry is not regulated at all. That's just a jaw-dropping comment. Can you talk about that just a little bit more? I don't think people generally know that.
Yeah, I mean, there aren't any laws except for cruelty laws, like animal cruelty laws, but so many things are exempt under standard agricultural practices. Like, for example, to kill piglets that are not growing fast enough or maybe sick or something. The standard agricultural practice, which is American Veterinary Medical Association approved, is to take it by the back hind legs, whirl it over one's head and smash it head first into the concrete floor. That's called thumping. It's also called packing, which is the acronym for pound against concrete. That's the standard agricultural practice. So if you wanted to charge somebody with animal cruelty, it would be extremely difficult since it's exempt in many states. Not all states exempt standard agricultural practices, but most do. And also because it's American Veterinary Medical Association approved, it's really hard to take on that association. And for example, with the hundreds of millions of poultry that have been depopulated, culled or killed because of avian influenza, the standard agricultural practice for killing them is called ventilation shutdown, which means you seal up all the barn inlets and you turn off the ventilation and you pump some added heat or steam into the room and you let these birds by the millions bake to death. And that's the way they're killing these animals. And they do that with pigs too. During the COVID outbreak, when there was not that much slaughterhouse capacity because people were sick and the slaughterhouses were shut temporarily suspended, they had pigs that were going to be too big. So a pig is too big, so it doesn't fit the model for the slaughterhouse. So they killed a million of them using ventilation shutdown.
Mm. Oh, this is just horrifying. You know, and what about the people, the terrible working conditions and the psychological ramifications of the people that work there?
Well, in the slaughterhouses, I encountered people who were trying to slaughter animals that were not rendered unconscious. They were trying to cut their throats while they were fighting with them. And those people became very aggressive and they would abuse their spouses. They would drink too much. They would carry firearms and things like that and do all sorts of things that were sort of aggressive. People in factory farms, I mean, they just become desensitized. I mean, one of the factory farms we exposed, the piglets, well, I'll talk about the pigs. Larger pigs, they had one worker for 2,000 animals. So pigs that were fallbacks or weren't growing fast enough or were cannibalized by other pigs, they would take them out and they would kill them by using a hammer or a wrench or a gate rod to hit them in the head, or they would stand on their throats. Or in this one case, this one individual talked about what he did to kill pigs was to put a hose down their throat and blow them up until their butt blank popped out. I mean, it's just people become desensitized, some become sadistic.
Oh my goodness. You know, this is just like you said, from the from the Upton St. Clair book all the way till now, which is 125 years later, you know, we're still experiencing, the people that work there are still experiencing the same thing. You know, I wrote a couple of Substacks on the fetal cow blood and also on the chicken fibroblasts and the chicken fiber parts that they do from baby chicks. And I found a document that shows that, well, there's a whole big set of material in the agriculture industry that talks about the extraction of the fetal cow blood and then becoming the fetal cow serum. And then there's another document that I found that about how they kill and smash up these baby chicks to get the chicken fibroblasts. And one of the things I said in the Substacks was, who are these people that are doing these jobs? I mean, who are they? They're Either they've always been, or they've turned into being just monsters that they just, it's just what they do. I mean, how do, and you had a lot of discussions with a lot of people in these slaughterhouses and that. What were some of the things that you exposed about what was going on with them in those conversations?
Well, I spoke with individuals who represented meat inspectors and mostly workers who had spent a combined total of about 3 million hours on the kill floor. And a lot of them talked about wanting to slit the throats of their supervisors, things like that, because they were so used to slitting the throats of live conscious animals that should have been unconscious. And they talked about slapping around their wives and things like that. It was just really, really sad. And then in other slaughterhouses, the workers were very forthcoming because they were just having to skin cows alive, and they were just, a lot of them were not Native American from the United States originally. They were immigrants, and they just were so frustrated with having to do that job. They were like, it was like the floodgates opened when they started telling me what they had to do. And I think there were about 12 of them showed their faces on an NBC special where they were going to talk about what it was like to have to skin cows alive. And NBC came and interviewed them, and they showed their faces because they were so fed up with having to do this. And then NBC canceled the show.
Oh,
So. But, it's interesting to note that, it's just worth mentioning that 20, 55 years ago, we killed 10 million animals, 10 billion animals worldwide. And now, here is 55 years later, we kill 10 billion animals in the United States alone each year. We kill 82 billion animals worldwide at this time each year.
wow.
For food.
I love a good steak, but I may just have to change my eating habits, or at least know exactly, because I have a local rancher here in Northeast Ohio that I get my meat from, and he's an older gentleman. I just love him. His name's Dominic, and I'm gonna guess he's in his early 80s. And he said, their ranch, he said, we were organic before it was a thing. We've been raising animals this way that, always. And he really self-selects, hand selects where he where the and he only takes a couple animals at a time to like the slaughterhouses that are local here in Northeast Ohio. And he handpicks them, for humane treatment, and for, if the animals are treated humanely when they are butchered, they don't get this big release of adrenaline and all of the cortisol that makes their muscles harder and tougher. And so it even impacts the meat as it becomes food and ends up on your table, how these animals are treated. And I'm sure you've talked about that in some of your writings too, correct?
Yeah, that's really true about the cortisol and the quality of the meat and it's the same thing with hogs too. Their meat becomes sort of slimy if they're stressed out when they're slaughtered. I don't know if slimy is the right word, but it's becomes paler, and it's just the result of the stress.
Well, let's go on to one other part. The title of your book, Out of Sight: An Undercover Investigator's Fight for Animal Rights and Your Own Survival. How did you what was transformative about your health conditions that this became partly your story also?
Well, there are a few aspects. First, I was so stressed out during my slaughterhouse inspection days that I said, I'm so stressed out, I think I'm going to get breast cancer. And then 6 months later, I had it. So that was the first thing. Another thing was, I had
Gail, I think you should comment that you were 35 years old when you had that breath. An important part of the story, how much stress affected that. I'm sorry to mean to interrupt you. Keep going. That's fine.
Oh no, that's fine. That is important. Yeah, it was pretty shocking to get it at that young age. The next part was I had a boss when I used to work at the Humane Society of the United States who would not let me expose my findings. So that was really troubling. There's something not right with him, and he just would not let me expose what was going on. I had to quit that job, and now he's in jail for life. Or I won't tell the details because it kind of gives away part of the story, but yeah, that was a good outcome. And but the most important thing was I've had this visual processing disorder my whole life, and where I see the world as pixelated, and it impacts a lot of different things. I see a lot of glare and a lot of floaters, but most of the problem comes with the confusion, and it's sort of like looking in a funhouse mirror sometimes where things don't make sense. It's very debilitating, and it's really like having dyslexia of the world where things just don't make sense. And I went to so many doctors, and I could not find a resolution to this problem. And it was very troubling to try to do this investigation while I couldn't see straight. And it took more than 100 doctors to find the what it is. That's because it wasn't identified as a rare disease until 10 years ago. And I found out while I was writing the book what was wrong with me. But during my entire investigative process, I just kept blaming myself, thinking, what is wrong with me? Why am I doing this to myself? Which is just you turn it on yourself because you're not getting any help from anybody else. And I finally found out what it was, and I'm considerably better. I just have a lot of glare and floaters now, but the confusion and the dyslexia of the world isn't so much of a problem anymore. But there are a lot of people who suffer from it. It's a rare disease, but there's a Facebook page devoted to it, and there are a lot of people that are really struggling.
And you talk about that a lot in your book. And just again, for listeners, we're talking to Gail Eisnitz, and it's spelled Eisnitz. And her new book, Out of Sight, An Undercover Investigator's Fight for Animal Rights and Her Own Survival. And all of this is just coming out, so there aren't any comments on Amazon because it's not posted on Amazon yet. But I read the comments from your previous book on called Slaughterhouse, and most all of the comments were saying that everybody needs to read this information. They need to be aware of this, whether you're a vegan or a vegetarian or you're paleo or whatever it is that you type that you eat. We need to know about what's happening to our food supply and what's happening to the sacrificial animals that that end up on our table and what we eat. And that people were really they felt like it was informative, but not particularly gross and gory, in that you've written a really, really good story to let people know. And I really want people to get this book and to read it. And I want people to write their congressman and get hold of the Secretary of Agriculture and see what we can do to help you move this forward. After 40 years of fighting this battle, Gail, it's time for this to come out in really full sight. So other than getting your book on Amazon, is there any other place that we can follow your work and follow your writings?
Yes, definitely. I work for Humane Farming Association, excuse me, the Humane Farming Association in California. We operate the largest farm animal refuge in the country. It's wonderful. And we do all sorts of legislative and educational and litigation and things to protect farm animals. And people can go to www.hfa.org. Excuse me.
HFA. I want to write that down to make sure it gets in the show notes here. H it's HFA.org.
Correct.
Okay.
It's the Humane Farming Association. We have 300,000 members, and it's a great organization, and We do a lot of good work.
Well, that ends this entire interview on an upbeat, exciting note that there's actually good things that we can do to try to make a difference for these animals and also the food that ends up on our table and for local farmers and all those sorts of things. So that ends up on a kind of a good note that there is something positive that people can do. And I'll say that again. It's the Humane Farming Association, HFA.org, where we can see all the things that they're doing and see what we can do to get this in front of the Secretary of Agriculture for the first time. You know, I think she's the only woman. She's the first woman to be a Secretary of Agriculture. No, she's not.
No, I think there was another. Oh, maybe she is the first woman. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the Undersecretary for Meat Inspection. That was a woman, but she may be the first woman ex secretary.
Yeah, so maybe there's a crack in the concrete there that we can move this through a little bit. You know, the meat packing industry and the ranchers industry and everything that's happening in the animal husbandry industry, it is a big lobbying association, huge lobbying association, kind of like the pharmaceutical industry is about vaccines and drugs. So I'm sure that all of these people are constantly being hammered by the lobbyists to not do anything to make a difference. But we, the people, really now with MAHA, I need to get you introduced to some of the leaders in the MAHA movement. It's about making, because I'm kind of in those circles of making America healthy again, which in all of the circles that I've been taught, that I'm on various committees and various big groups on Signal, we're all talking about food. It's all about food, and people need to know about this, and we need to get momentum behind your work because it's fantastic. I commend you so much for sticking to this all these years. You know, sometimes you just never know when finally, you know, God opens a window to really allow this to go forward. So, Gail, I want to thank you so much for your work. Thank you so much for being on our show today. This has just been phenomenal. And we're going to have some other work to do together, I'm sure, because this really motivates me, as I'm sure it motivates a lot of our listeners. So for everyone else that's here with us today, I'm so grateful for you coming to our show every Monday morning with This Week with Dr. T. And with that, I want to close out with one of my favorite verses from the Bible that I close all my podcasts with, whether they are live or pre-recorded, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until the next time, lean into God, trust Him for everything. He'll never let you down. And Gail, thank you so much again for being here. Thank you for your work. And to everyone else who has joined us, have a good week, everyone. We'll see you again 11 a.m. tomorrow morning with Happy Hour with Dr. T. Have a good week. Goodbye and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body's vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.